Breaking news tonight. Horror on the sidewalk. At least 9 people killed, 16 injured, as a van jumps the curb, plowing down pedestrians and leaving a sea of carnage in its path.
So many people just shouting, stop the car, but he didn't. He just kept moving.
Witnesses say it appears to be a deliberate act. Also breaking, a dramatic end to the manhunt for the suspected Waffle House gunman found hiding in the woods. How police tracked him down. More planes and more passengers grounded. New emergency inspections after that deadly mid-air explosion. And the FAA under growing fire over safety. A hidden epidemic among children, young and suffering in silence, but old enough under the law to refuse treatment.
I just kept telling my wife that our mental health system failed us.
Tonight, one family's powerful mission to warn others. And baby makes 3. George and Charlotte get a little brother who's already made his royal debut. But what's his name?
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. We begin with a carnage on the streets of Toronto this afternoon. A van jumped the curb, the driver plowing into pedestrians on a sidewalk, killing at least 9 people and leaving more than a dozen others injured. The deadly incident immediately brought to mind a series of vehicle terror attacks the world has witnessed over the last few years. Tonight, a Canadian official say this was apparently a deliberate act, but at this hour, they are not calling it terrorism. Tonight, a suspect is in custody, and our Ann Thompson has late details.
He mowed them down.
I saw a lot of people lying on the sidewalk that were in pools of blood.
Witnesses say the driver of this white van, identified by several U.S. law enforcement sources as 25-year-old Alec Manassian, started his rampage at 1:30 this afternoon on a busy Toronto street. Jumping the curb, hitting pedestrians, and driving south for more than a mile.
I saw body bags. So far, I've seen 3 body bags myself.
Driving behind the van, witness Ali Shaker.
I seen a stroller with a baby right about 2 blocks down, flying in the air. I seen some, I can't believe this. This is, oh my God.
Paramedics rushed the injured to hospitals. 90 minutes later, a dramatic confrontation captured on video. Police finding the suspect and his damaged rental van on a side street. Taking cover as the suspect points something at them. Making the arrest without firing a shot. The vehicle attack reminiscent of those in Nice, Berlin, and New York. But tonight officials are not calling it terrorism.
We cannot come to any firm conclusions at this stage.
An attack in the heart of Toronto, breaking its heart. Ann Thompson, NBC News.
Now to another major story we're following, this one in Tennessee, where a community gripped by fear for the last 36 hours is breathing easier after the arrest late today of the suspect in the deadly mass shooting at a Nashville Waffle House restaurant. A massive police manhunt centered on a wooded area near the restaurant ended this afternoon with the arrest of the man accused of killing 4 people and wounding others before fleeing on the run. Our Gabe Gutierrez has late details.
Tonight, after an urgent manhunt, the search for Travis Reinking is over. A tip from the public leading investigators to the 29-year-old, who surrendered wearing a backpack with a loaded gun inside.
He was taken to the South Precinct, where he immediately requested a lawyer and refused to make a statement.
It all came to a sudden end in the woods just 3 miles from where police say Reinking stormed into a Tennessee Waffle House early Sunday nearly naked and opened fire with an assault rifle, killing Debony Groves, Torian Sanderlin, Joe Perez, and Akilah Da Silva. His brother was with him inside the restaurant.
We just all ran. All I could think of while I'm hiding, where's my brother? It was all like a blur.
The death toll would have been much higher, police say, if not for customer James Shaw Jr., who wrestled away the gunman's AR-15.
My instinct was telling me to live, to fight back.
Investigators say days before the shooting, Reinking stole a BMW from this dealership, then led police on a chase seen in this dash cam video. Officers didn't connect the vehicle to Reinking until after the massacre.
He shows signs of significant instability.
Reinking once called himself a member of the Sovereign Citizens, an anti-government group. In 2016, he threatened to kill himself in his Illinois hometown, telling investigators of delusions that pop star Taylor Swift was stalking him. Last year, the Secret Service arrested him for trespassing near the White House. Authorities then seized several weapons he owned, but later gave them back to his father, who told police he returned them to his son.
And we got to make sure that it's more difficult for people who have these mental illnesses to get hold of these weapons of war.
Ryan King is now being charged with 4 counts of criminal homicide. An ATF official says his father, it's possible that he could face charges for giving him back those weapons. Lester?
All right, Gabe Gutierrez, thanks very much. Across the pond tonight, the newest little prince has arrived. Prince William and Duchess Kate welcoming a little brother for Prince George and Princess Charlotte. And he's already made his public debut, the family appearing outside the hospital, hopping in the car on the way home just hours after the birth. The big question now, what's his name? NBC's Kelly Cobier is on the baby beat for us in London.
Tonight, the royal family's new prince slept right through his TV debut. His parents handling the royal waves. Kate dressed like Diana, holding newborn Harry. The official announcement was done the old-fashioned way, posted at the gates of London's Buckingham Palace. For the rest of the world, a tweet announcing the birth of a healthy boy, 8 pounds, 7 ounces. The Queen, riding her horse in Windsor, was delighted. The Cambridges are now a family of 5. Prince George still in his school uniform, and Princess Charlotte showing no fear, smiling and waving for the cameras at the hospital to meet their baby brother. He's 5th in line to the British throne after Prince Charles, Prince William, Prince George, and Princess Charlotte. For the first time, the little princess can't be pushed out of the way just because she's a girl.
This is the first baby boy to be born in the royal family who is not going to boot Princess Charlotte out of the line of succession because the Queen has changed the rules there.
Champagne!
In London, they poured champagne and snapped selfies to celebrate the baby prince.
He's their 3rd child. He'll probably never be king, but as you can see, the interest is as strong as ever.
Today, Prince William handled the car seat himself and joked about being a dad. Will the baby boy be a Prince Arthur, Prince Albert, Prince Philip, perhaps? His dad would only say, you'll find out soon enough. Kelly Cobiella, NBC News, London.
And we certainly wish them well. In and around Washington today, they're rolling out the red carpet for French President Emmanuel Macron and his wife, Brigitte, making a glamorous entrance at the start of a busy few days with the Trumps before getting down to business tomorrow with the Iran deal among the critical topics on the table. The Macron's got a look at the Oval Office. It was a personal tour from President Trump. This video posted by Macron on his Facebook page. Tonight, President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump will host the Macrons for dinner at Mount Vernon. And tomorrow night, the first state dinner of the Trump presidency, with the French president getting the honors at the White House. Now to all the late drama unfolding on Capitol Hill. Moments ago, Secretary of State nominee Mike Pompeo cleared a key hurdle and will now go to the full Senate for a confirmation vote. After a last-minute change of heart on the committee spared Pompeo from what could have been an historical rebuke. NBC Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Andrea Mitchell has the story.
Tonight, Mike Pompeo survived a critical test. The Foreign Relations Committee supporting him at the last moment on a party-line vote. Republican Senator Rand Paul switching at the last moment.
I have changed my mind. I've decided to go ahead and vote for Director Pompeo.
Also picking up a vote from Republican Jeff Flake.
Senator, are you a yes or a no? Rand Paul has switched.
Yes, I'm a yes.
Pompeo, the current CIA director, had become a lightning rod pick by President Trump. First in his class at West Point, a top student at Harvard Law. But his controversial past comments on Muslims and a hawkish worldview make some question the CIA director's fitness to be America's top diplomat.
I think I have a fairly low bar on this one. I just want to see a diplomat who is a diplomat.
The White House blasting Democrats.
The majority of Democrats continue their pointless obstruction to score cheap political points with their base.
But Pompeo's confirmation just one hurdle now facing the president's foreign policy team.
The president faces a looming deadline on the Iran nuclear deal. And Pompeo, who met secretly with Kim Jong-un over Easter, is now planning the upcoming summit. This has many experts worry the president is too eager for a deal. Tweeting Sunday, they have agreed to denuclearization, so great for world. In fact, Kim only offered to freeze nuclear tests and dismantle an aging test site.
A big plus for Pompeo as he tries to rebuild a hollowed-out State Department. He has the president's ear, unlike Rex Tillerson. The question from critics, though, will he tell the president inconvenient truths, Lester?
Andrea Mitchell on Capitol Hill tonight. Thank you. 6 days after that mid-air engine explosion on a Southwest Airlines jet killed a mother of two, the airline today announced roughly 130 flights were canceled, taking planes out of service to search for any signs of engine metal fatigue. Southwest started the inspections before the FAA ordered action. Now the FAA is under fire, accused of not acting quickly enough. Here's Tom Costello with more.
Inspecting its 737 engines round the clock, Southwest today canceled 3% of its total flights, inconveniencing several thousand passengers yesterday and today. Last week's fatal engine explosion came nearly 2 years after another engine exploded without injury. But the FAA failed to order mandatory inspections until after last week's tragedy. Now the Senate Minority Leader accuses the FAA of going lax on safety.
They have to put safety first. Safety has to come first, and I worry that it no longer does.
In 2014, the FAA took 105 enforcement actions, but that dropped to just 28 last year, as it shifted to working collaboratively with airlines on safety. In a statement, the FAA says it's designed to identify potential risks before they become serious problems and ensure that corrective action is taken. U.S. aviation has never been safer. Last week's fatality was the first in 9 years. Still, the FAA is also under fire for failing to closely monitor low-cost carrier Allegiant Airlines and for allowing doors-free tourist chopper flights over New York that turned fatal for three tourists last month.
I think the FAA is developing a credibility issue. I think they need to take an introspective look, get back to the basics.
Meanwhile, 1,000 people turned out in Albuquerque late Sunday to remember 43-year-old Jennifer Reardon.
She's an amazing mom.
The mother of two who died after being partially sucked out of that Southwest window last week.
She's going to guide every decision that we make as a family for the rest of our lives. So she's still going to be here forever.
The Reardon family, the face of an aviation tragedy. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
Now to an urgent wake-up call for parents. Some 20% of kids in America between the ages of 13 and 17 will have a diagnosable mental, emotional, or behavioral disorder, according to the CDC. But in many states, we found minors can refuse treatment despite what their parents want. It's why a Washington state family is fighting for change after their own teenage son's tragic death. NBC's Cynthia McFadden has more in our series, One in Five, Kids at Risk.
He was happy, he was fun, he was outgoing.
Until, at 17, Jordan Binion took his own life. A tragedy that his family believes could have and should have been avoided. His older brother, Tony, remembers.
We did everything together, from camping to running around, riding our horses. We were best buds.
Everything seemed fine with Jordan, says Deb and Will Binion, until he was about 15. He started to withdraw. He was given an antidepressant, but something else was going on.
We would catch him at times talking to himself, and then he would laugh out loud, sometimes inappropriately.
He and Deb were worried enough that they drove Jordy to the Seattle Children's Hospital psychiatric unit.
Being over the age of 13, the teenagers have the right to deny whether or not they want to accept the mental health treatment.
So let's stop right there.
Yes.
In the state of Washington,
yes.
If you're 13 years old or older,
right.
You can say whether or not you'll stay in a psychiatric facility.
That is correct.
NBC News called all 50 states and discovered about 40% of them give minors the power to consent to treatment, sometimes as young as 12. Designed in the 1970s to protect young people, it turns out the laws can have the opposite effect. By the next day, Jordy wanted to leave.
I was told that you either come and pick up your son or we will release him to walk the streets of Seattle.
The Binions say without being diagnosed, Jordy was discharged.
They handed us his clothes and basically that was it.
A minor child checks himself out of a psychiatric ward on his own and they don't tell you anything?
Right. Exactly.
The very night that he got home, he went upstairs and he was crying and he was kind of rolling around on the floor holding his head.
Jordy saw a doctor a couple of times after he got home, but his parents say it took them 5 months to get an appointment for a more thorough evaluation. Part of the problem, there are only 8,300 child and adolescent psychiatrists in the U.S. and an estimated 17 million kids in need of one. The day before Jordy's long-awaited evaluation, he committed suicide.
I just kept telling my wife that our mental health system failed us.
It did. It absolutely did.
Seattle Children's Hospital told us they could not comment on Jordan's case due to privacy laws, but called his death a terrible tragedy. They say more resources are needed across the country and that they've taken several steps to improve care at their facility and in the region. Now, tomorrow night, we explore what the Binions are doing with the hope that what happened to their family will not happen to any other.
It is terribly sad, but they're doing something with their grief.
They are trying to do something with their grief, and they have.
All right, Cynthia, thank you. Still ahead, the amazing story of survival times two. The man who says he was attacked twice in a matter of months, first by a bear, then by a shark. We'll be right back. Back now with the man sharing a harrowing story of survival again. While on vacation in Hawaii last week, a wildlife survival instructor says he was bitten by a tiger shark. But less than a year ago, the very same man says he survived a bear attack while camping. What are the odds? NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer has his amazing story.
Here off the beautiful sun-kissed beaches of Kauai, a surf vacation for Dylan McWilliams suddenly turned into a life-or-death struggle.
Something hit my leg pretty hard. I saw a shark underneath me, and I just started kicking at it, and I ended up kicking it and just started swimming as fast as I can.
McWilliams says a 6-foot tiger shark bit his leg, leaving the 20-year-old with deep lacerations, forcing authorities to close the beach.
The scariest part was swimming back because I was maybe 50 yards from shore and I didn't know where it was.
This wasn't McWilliams' first encounter with a deadly predator.
I woke up to a crunching sound and a lot of pain.
Just 9 months ago, the wildlife survival instructor was mauled by a 300-pound black bear. While camping with a church group in Colorado, McWilliams was attacked in his sleeping bag.
I woke up and the bear had a hold of my head and was dragging me across the ground.
In both attacks, McWilliams says he was able to fight the animals off. The odds of surviving a shark and a bear encounter within a year, astronomical. Tonight, ready to get back in the water, McWilliams says he's lucky to have survived some of the unluckiest encounters on Earth. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News.
A man with a story to tell. We'll take a break. We'll be back in a moment with late word on the health of a former president. Stay with us. There is breaking news tonight about the health of former President George H.W. Bush. A spokesman says Mr. Bush has been hospitalized in Houston after contracting an infection that spread to his blood. The 93-year-old is said to be responding to treatments and appears to be recovering. This news, of course, comes just 2 days after the funeral service for wife Barbara Bush. The former First Lady died last Tuesday at the age of 92. Also making headlines tonight, police used a taser to take down a passenger in a confrontation caught on board an American Airlines flight from Miami to Chicago last night. Before takeoff, police say another passenger reported a man had inappropriately touched his girlfriend. When officers boarded, they say the man struggled with them and even reached for one of their guns. Finally, they tasered him and arrested him. The flight left an hour late. We'll take a short break. Up next, a father and son team who, as luck would have it, are serving their country side by side. Finally, tonight, most dads would be happy to work alongside their kids in the family business. When that family business is the United States Air Force, such an arrangement is pretty rare. And in this case of a father and son in Arizona, purely random. Tonight, their story of those who serve together. The view from the flight line at Arizona's Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. These A-10 Warthogs don't get off the ground without the work of Airman Jake Fermontes and Master Sergeant Bob Fermontes.
Anybody for those volunteers?
Not brothers in arms, but father and son in arms. Landing at the same base with his pop on his first assignment is the last thing Jake ever imagined.
I put everything overseas. I put Germany, England, Italy, Spain.
That's cool. Totally support you. It's fun. My first duty station was over in Japan, but you'll probably end up here joking about it, and now he's here.
There you go. Full arm extension.
The rare placement, a coincidence that allows them to share workouts and special days.
I mean, they're down the street. I wasn't alone on Thanksgiving.
Other airmen note the family resemblance, which is remarkable when you compare their basic training graduation photos. Even more so, given that Jake is adopted.
I think on the second date with my wife, he asked my wife if I could be his new dad.
An unbreakable family bond, now stronger through their shared pride for military service.
It's one thing to be proud of your kid to be able to join the military, but to actually see him progress through everything and grow up, I never even would have dreamed of asking for it because I'd never thought it possible.
What a great arrangement. Sometimes things just work out, don't they? We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.